This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler joins us in studio for our regular Tuesday growth and development discussion. Brian is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at cvilletomorrow.org. How are you, sir?
Good to be here.
Good to see you. Thanks for coming in. We were talking in the last half hour with Waldo Jaquith, who recently unveiled RichmondSunlight.com, a major step forward not only for the country, but certainly for Virginia, in terms of open government and putting sunlight on government and making it possible for citizens to learn about and understand and get information in real time about what's happening in state government, and you have something to add to that discussion.
Well, a couple things. One thought is that, one, it is an outstanding website. I am certainly using it. When I refer to legislation in Richmond, I'm sending out links that refer to Richmond Sunlight.
Yeah, so as am I. Yeah.
It's a beautiful piece of work, and I know the public all over Virginia is going to benefit from it. And you made the point that we are pretty lucky around here, that in Virginia, but also in Charlottesville-Albemarle, that our government does have a good track record of being open and having and responding to requests for information. Recently, the media did a little test and checked with all local governments to see if they could get documents in Freedom of Information Act request. And Charlottesville and Albemarle came out on the top of five or six localities in all of Virginia.
Yeah, for the entire state, they were just one of the very few localities, municipalities, that did everything right.
Yep.
It took them a little while, but they did it all right.
And so I think that's great that we do have local government that is responsive. One of the things Charlottesville Tomorrow tries to do is shine a little sunlight on local government as well and find those places where maybe things have been outside of public view. We've certainly done that with the recording of public meetings that don't typically get recorded or broadcast or covered by local media. So we've done that with things like the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which has meetings once a month. We've done that with the County Planning Commission. Those are things that are not on TV. So the folks in the city of Charlottesville are used to being able to watch local government on TV anytime they want, whether it's school board or now planning commission, city council. So the city is very lucky in that respect. The city is even pushing that further and allowing video streaming over the internet. And you can actually download or view meetings by agenda item.
Right.
After they happen.
The county hasn't had that luxury.
The county does not broadcast on TV. It has started podcasting Board of Supervisors and school board meetings. So again, they are also stepping forward, putting more information online. And I think, though, in reflecting about this, though, there is a sign that there's some clouds coming into Charlottesville and Albemarle, and I want to make sure we have a good discussion about them, because I think the public needs to be aware, and we always need to keep our eye on these issues.
But clouds, you say, my friend?
Clouds? There are clouds on the horizon,
the clouds
boy,
of
that have me concerned.
Edify us, Brian. The clouds of which you speak are
I picked up today's Seville Weekly, and Will Goldsmith has a little article there. And I want to draw a little attention to that, because it talks about government needing to be more efficient in its operations. And you talked about efficiency in the last segment.
Yeah, you got to really hold your breath when you hear somebody in government saying, yes, we want to be more efficient, so we're going to do this.
So here's what I read today. The City Planning Commission, because their meetings were running so long, they're now going to start having a pre-meeting. It's still a public meeting, but they're going to meet outside of the city council chambers where the cameras are. So they're going to be meeting in the office of the head of Neighborhood Development Services, Jim Tolbert. So the whole crew is going to get together there and sort of hash out a few things. It's still a public meeting. Minutes will still be taken. So it's not like Richmond where there won't be recorded votes or anything. But there will be, in my mind, the potential for important information to be shared among these planning commissioners and with staff that will not be in the public light the way it was before.
But there's no cameras there.
There are no cameras. And I assume they'll record it for their own archival purposes, but it's not going to be treated like their other meeting.
Let me get this straight. The city of Charlottesville made a very big deal that they had cameras on their public meetings so that they were, look at us. We're open government. We believe in sunshine. We want to make this information accessible as possible. And in my words, you err on the side of openness. That's where your extreme should be, not the other way. So they've made a very big deal about this. But there's news in the CBO Weekly today, if I hear you correctly, that they're going to start having, the Planning Commission in Charlottesville is going to start having a pre-meeting in somebody's office?
Correct.
You know,
I confirmed this with Jim Tolbert. I ran into him on the downtown mall. I said, Jim, let me get this straight. There's actually going to be a separate meeting without cameras. And he said, yes. And he said, it's going to be in my office for now. We may move it to a larger room if we have to. And he, you know, welcomed me to come. And I said, I'll be there, and I hope to bring my microphones, and we'll record these.
Well, I applaud you for that. I don't agree with that.
But it seems like a step backwards.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now, you know,
why would you have to? Why would you have a big public meeting in somebody's office? And even though you say it's still public, nobody's going to come into your office and try to squeeze in. I mean, unless they really think they should be there.
And what they're saying is they want to, quote, to preview the agenda, to hear about issues coming down the road, and to float questions. Well, those are all things the public is very interested in. And whether it's the city or county or any local government, you know, those things need to be transparent and need to be publicly available. And we shouldn't have to wait for the minutes to find out what happened in those sessions.
Yeah, the whole, I mean, it's 2007, for God's sakes, ladies and gentlemen. Why can't we just have our government work in the open with cameras and online? And it just blows my mind that in 2007, we have people working in government, local or state level, yeah, who are trying to move things behind closed doors.
I'm going to check with the members of the Planning Commission. I'll call up a few of them and ask them about it. We can give an update next week, maybe. And again, I don't think, you know, we've missed anything at this point. It's a new initiative. They just started it. And I'm going to try to find out when the next one of these pre-meeting meetings is. They are public meetings. They'll be officially noticed. Anybody can go to them. But they're in a different location from the primary meeting, which will happen at 6:30. These pre-meetings will start at 5 o'clock.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. It's our regular Tuesday growth and development discussion. And what do you think about this? 977-1070. You're listening to this program. You live right here in these neighborhoods. What do you think about these initiatives? What do you think about these pre-meetings? And they can say, can the Planning Commission members in Charlottesville sort of have a vote and say, look, we don't want to go into somebody's office. We want our meetings to be very as public as possible.
Yeah, apparently they voted to do this. They voted, according to the article, to change their bylaws to allow them to have this separate meeting. Now, I'm not sure why they had to do that, but apparently there was some issue there. So they've decided to do it. Again, it's still a public meeting. You know, anytime you have more than two elected or appointed officials like this together in a room talking about public business, then they have to declare it as an open meeting, so that the public is noticed about it in advance in the newspaper. The other cloud on the horizon is in Albemarle County, and that is a trend that's concerning me. Whereas in the city, we have a decision to start doing this. There's no track record of problems at this point. We'll certainly keep an eye on it. In the county, something that concerns me is the amount of business coming up at the end of Board of Supervisors meetings under other business. And if a supervisor brings something up under other business, it's typically not in the agenda. So the public doesn't receive the agenda and say, oh, they're going to talk about X. And then it comes up at the end of the meeting. And unless you've waited till the very end of the meeting, and these meetings can be long, that's the only time you have to be there to catch it. Fortunately, you know, we do have local media that stayed at the end of these meetings, and the Daily Progress and Seville Weekly and others have caught a few of these.
Where they're just throwing stuff in at the last minute after most of the people have left.
Yep. There was a recent decision to join the Chamber of Commerce. There was another decision to set up a $250,000 economic development opportunity fund. And then most recently, and you had Ken Boyd on this morning talking about the discussion about Berkmar Drive Extended,
which we're definitely going to talk about before you leave here today. If you'd like to join this conversation or you have a comment regarding the subject, give us a call at 977-1070. Allison is on the line in Charlottesville. Allison, you're on with Brian Wheeler. Go right ahead.
This isn't exactly on the topic, but just on the question of open government. I have a question about this openness of the schools. I have a child who's getting ready to go to kindergarten, and I called and asked our local kindergarten if I could come see the school. And the teacher responded that the only time they allow parents to come observe the schools is between 8:30 and 9 in the morning when they have reading time. And I said that I'd like to see what a lunch is like and what a dismissal is like or what, you know, playground time is like, and they said no. They said, you know, and then finally the teacher said, well, you know, maybe we can talk about it, but you have to start out just with the reading time, and then we can, you know, then we can consider it. And it just really surprised me that, you know, that there are these limits and boundaries to what, you know, parents can come see at their public schools that they're considering sending their children to. Do you know about, I mean, is this a policy or...
Allison, it's a good question. I guess I would suggest that if you're getting that kind of response from a teacher, the next place to go would be the principal's office. The principal certainly wants to make sure there are opportunities for any member of the public to get a good sense about their school before a parent makes a choice as to whether to send their children there. And they may very well have guidelines that may be set on a school by school basis. I'm not sure about, you know, what times are appropriate. But certainly I remember doing that when I was a parent and our daughter was heading into kindergarten, and we went and visited Woodbrook and went in there at different times in the day and actually sat through a whole class.
So it could be different for each school or even for each classroom. The teacher can make up some rule his or herself about how people can come in and see what they do?
The principal might have guidelines for their school. I don't know that in the county or in the city of Charlottesville that that's set at, you know, a central office level. I'm just frankly not sure about that. But my guess would be it's up to the principal to find the right times and opportunities so that, you know, instruction isn't interrupted, but the public has access to see, you know, what the quality of instruction is.
Yeah, it seems to me if anything about government should be open, you would think the public school should be open to parents considering it for their children. And it just surprised me the degree of, you know, closed-mindedness, you know, or that, you know, there are things we don't want you to see or that we're going to make it hard for you to see about these public schools.
Yep. Well, I would encourage you to walk that up the chain of command and talk to the principal, and then if that doesn't get you an answer you expected, go to the central office.
Right. Thank you.
Allison, thank you so much for the call. Let's take a very quick break. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and you're listening to Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. I'm Coy Barefoot. Welcome to the program. The phone number is 977-1070. We'd love to have you join us. We're talking with Brian Wheeler for our regular Tuesday growth and development discussion. And so we've been talking about closed government, these dark clouds on the horizon in the county and the city.
I hope they're going to blow away quickly.
It's disconcerting. Let me just put it that way. I mean, that the city would set up this new rule to have this quote-unquote public meeting in somebody's office. It's just that's wrong. And then again, remind us what's going on in the county.
In the county, what we're seeing is a pattern of very important items being brought up under other business. And
instead of being put officially on the agenda so you can see ahead of time, hey, they're going to talk about this.
Correct. And again, in the name, I think some would say, of efficiency, such that Mr. Boyd was quoted, Ken Boyd, his current chairman of the Board of Supervisors, was quoted in the Daily Progress as saying that he had sort of polled board members and he had the votes to get something done. And that was very much what he said when he brought up the initiatives to join the Chamber of Commerce and create an economic development fund. He said, you know, he had the votes and he wanted to go ahead and move forward
But it was never put on the agenda.
It wasn't put on the agenda. It did come back. Those two items came back for a public hearing. The most recent one was a discussion about pulling a road basically out of a master planning process. This is Berkmar Drive Extended. Berkmar Drive starts right across from Fashion Square, curves around, then goes behind the Rio Hill Shopping Center.
Behind Lowe's.
Next to Agner Heard Elementary.
Behind Walmart. Up into the Sam's Club parking lot.
Exactly. And the idea, which has long been talked about, is to continue that road across the Ravanna River up to Hollymead Town Center so that you then have a parallel road extended, you know, quite a long distance along 29, which would be very helpful to alleviating traffic congestion. So Mr. Wyant, David Wyant, who's the Whitehall District Representative, apparently at the end of the meeting under other business brought this up and said, is there interest in pulling this off? We have a developer very interested in building a portion of Berkmar Drive Extended, and he needs to sort of grease the works here if he's going to get the commitment from the people that would move into this property and develop it. He needs a commitment from the county to go ahead and let him build it. There'd be some rezoning, I think, involved. Some of that land is in the rural area. I think some would have to be added to the growth area. And so there's this notion that late in a meeting under other business, a specific road would be yanked out of a master planning process. And some of the board members pushed back on it, and staff actually pushed back on it as well. And they ended up not having the votes to move forward with it. And it sort of got tabled at the end.
Yeah.
But again,
this is a tactic let's be honest. This is a tactic, right or left, Republican or Democrat, at local government or even at state government. Often you'll see legislators bring up what could be controversial stuff under quote unquote other business at the very end of a meeting when most people have gone home, and even the reporters Some of them have already left, and they have the stories that they have. They have their quotes. They've got to get back to the office and file the story. They'll often bring up controversial stuff late in a meeting.
It's one thing to bring it up. It's one thing, I think, for an elected official to bring it up and say, hey, I'd like to discuss this further. Can we put this on the agenda for a future meeting? I think that's one approach an elected official might take in this situation. It's another approach to try and get the vote right then and there.
Yeah, yeah. To push to say, you've got to vote on this tonight.
Right.
And I know it wasn't on the agenda, but here it is, and I need your vote now. And this is what you're saying. This is what Ken Boyd and David Wyant did at a recent Board of Supervisors meeting regarding this road. We're going to continue this discussion on the other side of the break, and we're going to hear from Ken Boyd. He was on WINA's morning show today, just this morning. We'll hear a clip from that interview and hear his explanation of it, and then we'll flesh this out and find out exactly why this is so controversial and what is an opposing view. And we look forward to your calls at 977-1070. This is Charlottesville Right Now. Brian Wheeler joins us for our Tuesday growth and development discussion, which is now new and improved in the 5 o'clock hour, despite the irksome directional satellite, tower change thing we have to do when it gets dark. Thank you, FCC. We're pushing that rock uphill all the same.
I don't even know where to begin, Coy.
Brian, let's remind folks again what we're talking about here. This has made some press lately. It was in the Daily Progress. Lots of folks around town are talking about this. And sort of set the scene for us again, and then we'll hear what Ken Boyd had to say this morning on the WINA Morning Show.
I don't have all the details, but I'll try to describe what I know. And we're talking about a stretch of property between the current Hollymead Town Center development and the Ravanna River. And that's the area where Berkmar Drive would be extended, you know, past the Doubletree Hotel. It would keep on heading north parallel to 29. And my understanding is the developer, Wendell Wood, owns a lot of that property. He may own all of it. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the tax records. But what I think is happening is he is interested in moving forward with parts of that development. He's been in front of the Albemarle County in the past trying to get parts of it that are currently zoned industrial zoned to something that would allow more commercial endeavors and perhaps even some residential. This area is not only on the, you know, front burner for him as a developer and property owner, it's also on the front burner for the County of Albemarle because it's in the middle of the Albemarle Places 29 master planning process. We've talked about master plans out in Crozet. This is the second one that the county has undertaken, but it's a big one.
And again, the Places 29 is what exactly? It's a whole bunch of people in government, out of government, who meet regularly to try to figure out and map out how we're going to develop this Route 29 corridor through the county.
Right. And of course, a lot of residents right now are thinking, well, isn't it too late? You know, I hear that a lot. Hasn't it already been built? And yes, it has, but that doesn't mean that, it can't be better and that we can accommodate things like public transit. Bus rapid transit is something that's talked a lot about in the community.
Or in this case, new roads and new bridges.
New roads, parallel roads. It's where are we going to put a fourth high school? It's things like where can we redevelop, properties. So, for example, we often talk about density here. Can you redevelop to a higher level of density, meaning more housing units, going vertical, for example, and getting mixed use communities in place? So mixed use means there's commercial and residential in the same place. And much like what the one anchor of this is Albemarle Place at Hydraulic and 29. That's an example of a future mixed use community. And it's that one though is on a piece of green ground right now that has not been developed. Places 29 is trying to think 20 years out. How can we, as property owners, decide that they want to redevelop a piece of property? How can we sort of give them a guidebook for what the community is looking for?
But it sounds like what Wendell Wood is proposing is like, you know, screw Places 29. This is what I want to do now, and I need your vote now. And this is it accurate that Ken Boyd is sort of at the meeting, late at that meeting, he said, look, we got to do this. He put some urgency to it. We got to do this right now.
Well, to be fair, I guess you could say, yes, these planning processes take a long time. So a master plan takes a couple years to figure out. for some developers, that's way too long. They've got their piece of property. They have their own business schedule by which they want to do things. And if the two don't line up, you know, they can operate under their existing zoning. In this case, it sounds like they would like to both get it rezoned, included in the growth area, and they're willing to come forward with some money to build part of this connector road, but not, importantly, however, the bridge.
$12 million bridge.
The Ravenna River. So, you know, I think one response to the discussion you're about to hear is, well, if it's going to be developed, don't you need an internal road network anyway? If you're going to develop it for housing or commercial use or industrial use, you're probably going to build a road for people to get there. So the road is sort of the cost of doing business anyway. And what I think the developer would get in this situation, were it to move forward and be pulled out of the whole master planning process, would be the ability to move forward more rapidly instead of waiting to see what the final plan is. This road, though, has been consistently left in the plan and for many years has been thought to be a good thing. So I don't think there's an argument about whether the road is a good thing or a bad thing. The question is the timing. When is the appropriate time to let the master plan process play out?
And priorities as well. Do we want to spend, if we get any money for roads or bridges, do we want to spend the first $12 million of it on this particular bridge for this particular road?
Well, and just because a certain half of it is built doesn't mean the connector, you know, the connecting bridge would have to, it doesn't mean it's forcing your hand to build that immediately. Sure, it'd be nice. And everyone's going to be looking at that road dead ending and saying, why can't I get over there? And so that'll certainly move it up the priority list. But I think the bigger question is the rezoning of the property, the addition of some rural land into the growth area sooner rather than as part of the master planning process.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. If you'd like to join this conversation, pick up your phone. It's 977-1070. George is on the line. You're on with Brian Wheeler. Go right ahead.
Hey, Mr. Barefoot, how you doing?
Very good. How are you, George?
Fine. Mr. Wheeler, I just have a question, and I was trying to understand that if the road has been in the mouth for years, and someone owns the land, but the road has been there for years, now can't the state go ahead and seize that property if it's going to benefit the state, regardless of what the homeowner or owner can do about it?
Good question, George. What you're suggesting is the power of eminent domain, where local government could basically condemn a piece of property, buy it from the property owner and say, I'm sorry, we have to build a road right through the middle of your property. And there are certain situations where government can do that. This would not be one of those situations, and there are a couple reasons why. One, the property owner, Wendell Wood, who owns a lot of this land, and I'm not sure all of it, but most of it, is, you know, has ideas about how to develop it. And the county, I think, will want to make sure that those are factored in to the master planning process and to as much a degree as possible, you know, coordinate their interests and efforts with Mr. Wood. The other reason that the county wouldn't go ahead or the state would not go ahead and say, we're building Berkmar Road right now, is that they don't have the money to do it. So there's no money to actually build that road for somebody to say, well, let's do it today.
Right. Okay.
Does that make sense?
I certainly appreciate it. You've answered my question 100%, and thank you, sir.
Thank you, George, for the call. Look forward to hearing from you again. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Let's hear from Ken Boyd, chairman of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. He was on the WINA morning show this morning explaining the rationale behind his support for a very quick vote to support this initiative by the developer. This is Ken Boyd this morning.
And the motion was to take this particular project and pull it out of the doldrums of the planning department where it had been sitting for 2 years and bring it out to the light of day and let the public understand that this was on the table and let it become a public discussion. We wanted it to go back to the planning commission and become an active project so that the public could weigh in on it. We wanted this to go in concert with the Places 29, not around it. It wasn't an in run around it. We wanted this to be part of it. It was a significant, important part.
Now, when Places 29, the whole idea of Places 29 was developed, the possibility of that road was included in Places 29, was it not?
That's right. In fact, Berkmar Drive Extended has been a road that's been on the books for years before Places 29. I think I'm the only supervisor that's been to every single Places 29 meeting in Charette. That road is the only one that has survived every single cut that is almost 100% favored by the citizens that have come out to those meetings and all. We saw an opportunity to build a great portion of it, going out the window if we didn't get it up on the table. We wanted it to become part of the Places 29 discussion, and that's what we were attempting to do. Now, it's true that it's the biggest expense of that road would be a bridge, another bridge across the Rivanna. That is not part of what the developers are doing, because that would be too costly, so we're told by both him and the tenant, for them to undertake. But we estimate, or they estimate, that it would be about $12 million worth, and we just didn't think we should let that money go away and mm-hmm. have it taken off the table because of our inability to act on it. And we thought that it was very appropriate that it be discussed at the same time as Places 29, since here we had a road that's favored by most of the people that have been attending the charrettes, by all the people. I've not heard anyone say that they were opposed to that. On the other side of the road, there's a lot of opposition to us getting a parallel road that might run through existing streets. And I'm afraid that if we don't get Brookmore Drive extended, that would be the less expensive way, because if we use neighborhood streets to create a parallel road, we don't have to build them. And I'm opposed to using neighborhood streets for throughways or parallel roads.
That was Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, Chairman of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, Ken Boyd, on this morning's edition of the WINA Morning Show. I thought it was funny that he referred to the doldrums of the planning department,
yes,
where things go and just disappear.
Well, and a whole lot of staff work is going into the Places 29 master planning process. And in fact, my tape recorder is sitting over in the doldrums of the planning department right now, recording them talking about this very subject. So they are, the planning commission's over there right now meeting, talking about Places 29. They're getting an update on it. We'll have that audio up on our blog tonight.
I don't think anybody listening doesn't think it wouldn't be cool to get on the road behind the Walmart, the Lowe's, and drive past Sam's Club, and then on another bridge up to Target, yeah, and never have to get on 29. I think everybody thinks that, well, that would be cool. That would be convenient. That would be a really neat access road. What's missing from that? Oh, wouldn't that be cool?
Well, it's a cooperative effort, and we're talking about government funds here and the public tax dollars. And we were talking about Richmond Sunlight and Sunlight in Albemarle and Charlottesville and an open government process. And there's a public process to these things. And yes, it takes time, but it takes time for a reason. We want to be thoughtful about how we prioritize things and how we develop master plans. I mean, I think it's you know, a lot of localities are not putting the effort into a master planning process like this. They just let nature take its course. A developer comes forward and says, hey, I'll give you a little money and help build this road. Can we get this rezoned and let me build my whatever I want?
The private developer sets the priorities for the community,
right,
and then they subsidize his or her private enterprise.
And again, a master plan doesn't take away private property rights. I mean, if you own a piece of property, you can do whatever, however it's zoned, you can do that. The master plan gives a guide for future development and says, hey, if you're going to ask for a rezoning and try to do something else beyond what your land is zoned for, here's an idea of what we have in mind as a community. It's a community process. So not only are the elected officials involved, but the planning commissioners, staff, public. There have been charrettes. Mr. Boyd mentioned that he had been to all the charrettes.
Which, for folks who don't know, it's basically a design meeting.
It's a public workshop where,
yeah,
you can come, look at the maps, put little sticky notes on them, draw on them with a Sharpie marker, and say, I don't want the road here, I want it here, or
right,
I want
right
to park here and not here.
Now, what's your reaction to what Ken Boyd said, having been to all those meetings just like he has been?
Well, I guess my first reaction is I want to get a little bit more information about what exactly was on the table from the developer. I think that is important to know what was at stake. Mr. Wood, the developer, has done this in the past. He's come to the supervisors and said, relate with respect to land around the National Ground Intelligence Center, he has asked them to expand the growth area around the Ground Intelligence Center onto property that he owns so that he can develop it and sell it to the U.S. Army, U.S. government. And the price he was going to be able to get for that land, I think it was about $7 million, was what the government had at their disposal to buy the land, and that wasn't enough from his point of view as a business owner, property owner. So he asked for some additional land from the county to be added to the growth area, which he could develop and sort of make up the differential in his mind. The supervisors, I think, voted 6-1 in favor of that land designation to support the same developer up around the Ground Intelligence Center for development there. And some of them did so with because, and only because, I think I would say, is because another property owner over on Pantops was willing to have land that was in the growth area taken out and returned to the rural area.
So it's not.
So this was a balance of land trade. But again, it was another situation where the developer came and said, if you don't help me do this today, it's an emergency.
Yeah.
The National Ground Intelligence Center is going to leave Charlottesville.
So it's not uncommon then for a private developer to come to the county and use a sense of urgency to compel them to do something that they're not really doing right now and that sort of goes against the public process and the public input. And certainly Wendell Wood has done this before.
Sure. These are business decisions, Coy. I mean, there's a lot of money at stake on,
right,
on these
right.
projects. And I think, you know, we saw in 2006, in the course of all the discussions we've had on the radio about that sort of intense pressure to get things rezoned and approved and in the queue. And that currently is reflected in the pipeline we have of housing that has been done and has been approved but hasn't been built yet.
How many homes now are in the pipeline that have been already approved?
In the county, it's about 8,100 houses that have been approved but not built. The overall pipeline, if you include projects that are being thought about, like Biscuit Run, which is about 3,000 homes, and then if you include the city, you get up to about 18,000 housing units that are in the pipeline, which is approved, considered, or an idea.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at cvilletomorrow.org. We're going to let you get out of here so you can get over to the doldrums.
Thanks for having me. I got to go turn off my recorder.
Let's take a very quick break. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.